I'm dedicating the shiur this morning in memory of Chaim Markowitz, all of our shalom, a young man in our community who passed away last night. The levaya is going to be later today. And we're a little shaken up. His parents are Ron and Miriam Markowitz. They live on HaKablam. And Chaim has been ill for many years, but things got very bad yesterday and by nightfall. It was over. So we... Alright. Perek Mem Tet. Last week, we gave the historic background to chapter 49. In chapter 49, we hear Yeshayahu saying that he felt that everything that he had done had been in vain. He failed. He thought that he would be able to avoid and stop the ultimate destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and he saw that that was not going to be so. He had taken Klal Yisrael through a number of historic periods. You may recall yet at the beginning of the year we said that Yeshayahu may have prophesied over a period of close to 90 years. He had taken them through the period of Aram, the civilization, the empire of Aram, and then through the empire of Assyria, Ashur, and he was also there at the very beginnings of the rise of Babel, not yet Nebuchadnezzar. That will come later. So he thought that all of his attempts to that Klal Yisrael should do tshuva, which means that Churban would not take place, there would not be an exile of the people, but he lived to see the exile. He saw the 10 tribes being taken off into exile. Yehuda and Binyamin were not yet going to be taken off until later. So he thought that everything that he had done had been in vain. And we will see in this chapter, and in the next chapter, we're going to hear Yeshayahu speak of himself and his own feelings. We don't find that very often in Sefer Yeshayahu. There are a few places at the beginning of Yeshayahu where some biographical sketches, not terribly significant. In chapter 6, he describes his first vision of God, and he hears a voice asking him, "Whom shall I send to the Jewish people, and who will go?" And Yeshayahu is the one who says, "Hineni, here I am, I'm ready to go." So there are a few biographical vignettes, but here in chapter 49 and in 50 we hear him talking out of a sense of absolute despair until he receives a message from God that his ministry, his message is going to be a message now, well, let's say two things. It will be a message to all of mankind. It will be a message to all of mankind, that's one. And number two, whatever he had said about the Jewish people during the course of the great empires of Aram and Assyria, not a single word will not be on it. In other words, he had talked after the 10 tribes had gone into exile. He had talked about the ingathering of the exiles. He had hoped that the ingathering of the exiles would take place in his own time, because there were already exiles. 80% of the Jewish people had been taken into exile. And he hoped that the clock would be turned back. Everything is going to change, and everything is going to be good, but it didn't happen in his day. But God tells him it's going to happen. Nothing that you have said is going to remain unfulfilled. On the sheets that I gave you, we have one of the pieces of the Malbim where he describes the historical background and how the dramatic change that is going to be taking place now in Yeshayahu's message. The sheets that you have in front of you have 2 pages. One of them says Tof Reish Chof. You see the page numbers, Tof Reish Chof, Tof Reish Chof Aleph. That's the side you should be on now. You don't have anything in the bag. There went. Are there any? There should be more. Okay. You know, my machine is not perfect. You understand? Here, there I go ahead. I blame the machine. It can't be my mistake because take a look. I did the others. It's the machine.
Is that easy to blame somebody?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm doing. Especially since I'm innocent. But I should have checked it. On Tav Reish Chaf, go down to the last line. The very last line at the bottom is the beginning of a major essay by the Malbim. Down at the bottom. Ad Kitzei Haaretz. Huh?
Okay. Yeah.
The Pasuk, Pasuk Vav, had said, Vayomer, that God responds to Yeshayahu's cry of despair. That I haven't succeeded in anything. So in Pasuk Vav, Vayomer, God said, Nokel mi yodchal li eved. It's an easy thing for you to be a servant unto me to do. Lahokim et shivte Yaakov, to cause the tribes of Yaakov to stand up, Unitsure Yisrael Lahashiv, and to return the shoots of Israel. The Malbim explains that a shevet, by which also signifies a tribe, a shevet is a staff, a stick. Shivtecha umishantecha hema yenachamuni. A shevet is a staff, a stick. A netzer is a shoot that's growing out of the ground. The difference between a netzer and a shevet is a piece of wood that has already been cut from the ground. It's not connected. The netzer is still connected. Yaakov always represents the masses of people. The masses of people are seen as no longer being connected to God. Yisrael, which are the religious elite, so to speak, and I don't like the word elite, they are still a nature. They're small. They haven't grown in the proportions that God would have wanted them to grow, but they're still connected. It may also represent the idea that the 10 tribes are already in exile. They're separated from Mother Earth, from the Moledet, from Eretz Yisrael. Yisrael, which represents Yehuda and Binyamin, are still rooted in Eretz Yisrael. So God says, you should know. For me to do that for you, that's easy. In other words, that you should be the one who will cause the tribes of Yaakov to stand, because they've fallen. They have fallen. Or Netzuda Yisrael Lahashiv, the shoots of Israel, to bring them back. That's going to be easy stuff. But you know what your great message is going to be? I'm going to make you a light unto the nations, so that my salvation should come to the very ends of the earth. The whole world is ultimately going to know of your message. If you recall a shiur that I gave much earlier in the year, it's 2,700 years after Yeshayahu, but there's an Isaiah wall at the United Nations. There are messages that were given by Yeshayahu that have become the treasure of a whole world. Yeshayahu's message is not limited as it was in his own days. In his own days, limited only to the Jewish people. Yeshayahu's message will ultimately be a message to the whole world. Now, huh?
We have to be the whole world in order to be united to the world.
Hold that in abeyance. We don't have to be there. We don't have to be there. Golos is an onesh. Exactly the words I was going. No one can ever look at Golos in any other way. And even when our rabbi said that Jews went into exile so that converts should join them. You know what Chazal always looked for? To find, even in the great tragedy of the Jewish people, find some little bit of a silver lining. Like, Golus is terrible, but you know, there may be some slight benefits that are going to accrue. But it wasn't worth it. If the question would be asked, should we go into exile so that we should pick up a few converts along the way, or remain in Eretz Yisrael, of course the answer would clearly have been, oh no, no, we're staying here. So anybody who tries to turn Golus into some kind of a higher challenge or task for the Jewish people, and there are some religious Jewish thinkers who have attempted to do that, it just doesn't wash. Golus was always onesh. It was always punishment. And the Maharal, in one of his svarim called Netzach Yisrael, his opening chapter, he says, it is unnatural for a people not to be on its own land. It is unnatural for a people to be separated, divided. It is unnatural for a people to be dispersed throughout the world. That's the unnatural condition. The natural condition is a united people in their own land. So therefore, there he makes the statement that says it all. And any attempts at trying to turn Golus into some kind of a glorified message of the Jewish people just isn't so. All right. I'll give one other introduction to this, and then you will, some of you who may recall something that I said some years ago, I haven't said it now in a good number of years, will see that it is based on this amalgam. I had heard it originally, the first time I heard it from Rav Pam, Shlita of Shiva of Parvadas, and he only in passing said that this is really the approach of the Malvim in Yeshayahu. This is one of the places at which he says it, and there is one other place. And we'll talk about that in a little while. Based on the Pasuk in Torah says, V'yodata im levavecho, you should know it in your heart. This is Moshe Rabbeinu says it. I believe it's in Parashat Ekev, in Tvarim. Moshe Rabbeinu says, V'yodata im levavecho, you should know it in your heart. Ki kasher yiyaser ish et beno, Hashem elokecho miyasecho. The way a father will admonish a child, a son. This is the way God admonishes the Jewish people. In other words, there are times at which they must suffer, but the suffering has a positive purpose to it. So Rav Pam said the following. There must therefore be a corollary to this pasuk. If God, when he brings punishment upon the Jewish people, does it as a father, then the corollary must be, well, what does a father do after he brings punishment? After he brings punishment, he attempts to rebuild the relationship with his son. And what he does is he pours out his love in a way unprecedented in order to rebuild the bridges to bring him close. Therefore, Rapam said that it is built in to Jewish history. It's a basic and fundamental part of Jewish history that after every period of great suffering, there is an outpouring of God's goodness upon the Jewish people to the point that that period of time in potential could become the Messianic era. Because following suffering, there must come the period of rebirth. He pointed out four periods in Jewish history. I'll mention them only briefly now, and we'll elaborate on them. The first, he says, is the period following Sanhedrin, king of Ashur. We're talking about 80% of the Jewish people had been exiled. The death and destruction that he brought upon Eretz Yisrael was awesome and frightening. Remember we read last week, he was waiting in chapter 10 in Yeshayahu. He says, Od Hayom Benov La'amod, he's standing at Nov. He's standing someplace between, by Givat Zarfatit, and he waves his hand against Yerushalayim and says, no problem, we'll conquer Yerushalayim, we'll capture the city tomorrow. Do you know what that means? He has laid waste all of Eretz Yisrael. Everything is in the hands of Sanhedrin. There's only one prize he hasn't taken yet, and that's Yerushalayim. We're talking about an awesome period. 80% of the Jewish people are exiled. I don't know how many percent have been killed in battle by Sanhedrin. That would have to be 150 years before the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. If the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash was 586, I think, before the Common Era, so go back 150 years and that, you know, my backwards math is not too good. That was the worst period of tragedy that had befallen the Jewish people from the time they had entered Eretz Yisrael. And of all things, that chapter 10 that we read is followed by chapter 11. And this chapter 11 is a very good chapter 11. Chapter 11 in Yeshayahu is the chapter of the coming of the Mashiach. And the Malbim says there, why is the coming of the Mashiach mentioned right after the victory over Sanhedrin? Because we're talking about the lowest point in Jewish history. And as Rav Palm says, following terrible suffering, death, and destruction, God embraces his Jewish people and he pours out his kindness. The second period that he cited was the period of Rabbi Akiva. Why did Rabbi Akiva think that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach? Was Rabbi Akiva wrong? Rabbi Akiva wasn't wrong. The Talmud, in fact, says Rabbi Akiva and all the people of his generation thought that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. What were they? Were they starry-eyed messianics? You understand? That become already a negative terminal. Mishichisten? Is that what Rabbi Akiva was? Absolutely not. But during the days of Rabbi Akiva, which was 70, 80 years after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, we're talking now approximately the year 130. The cruelty of Rome had reached such frightening proportions. Klal Yisrael had become a sea of blood. So Rabbi Akiva understood that at a period such as this, the potential for the coming of the Mashiach exists. And therefore when he sees a man with such unusual strength and ability, he said, Dein Malko Mashiach, this is King Mashiach. And in fact, the Medrash says, if not for the sins, he could have been Mashiach. The time was right for it. The third period that he points out in Jewish history is 16th century. 1550, we have a collection of some of the greatest Kabbalists of all living in a town called Tzfat. You have the Ari HaKadosh, the Achizal, you have Rabbi Shlomo Alkavitz. Just read through, and we're going to see during the course of the next few chapters where Rabbi Shlomo Alkavitz, who wrote the Lechadodi, where he took most of his sentences from. They are takeoffs on Yeshayahu. You know what he's talking about? He's looking from Tzfat and he tells Yerushalayim, you know, remove the dust from upon you, get up, Ben Yishai is on the way. It's all full of messianic anticipation. And not only that, it was at that moment in Jewish history that something was done then that was never considered before nor afterwards. A great halachic debate developed in Eretz Yisrael. There were those, Maharib Beirav was one of the Gedolei Yerushalayim, decided that the time has come to reinstitute the Sanhedrin. And basing himself upon a Rambam, the Rambam says that if the majority of rabbis living in Israel are going to decide to give a person ordination, that smicha has the power of the smicha of Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't want to denigrate the smicha that rabbis get today. I have a few of them too. Maybe because I thought that they're not so good, so I got a few of them. But no. There is a smicha which was given by Moshe and went down from generation to generation until the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. That smicha gave one the authority to be a member of Sanhedrin and pass judgment, capital punishment, fines. There are all sorts of areas of halacha that we cannot deal with today simply because we don't have the proper smicha. All of a sudden, in the middle of the 16th century, a debate breaks upon the scene in Eretz Yisrael, and there are those who want to institute the smicha all over again. And they indeed gathered the majority of rabbis in Eretz Yisrael, and a number of people were given smicha. There was a Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi, wrote the Shittut and Betzes, he was given smicha. I think Rabbi Yosef Caro may have been given smicha. A number of the others, we're talking about great people, the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch lived at that time in Tzfat. We're talking about a number of great people, and then the idea disappeared. Why were they in such a messianic period, a period of messianic anticipation? I was going to say frenzy, but that wouldn't wash well. Wasn't that, we're talking about great, great people, giants. The Ahi, Rabbi Joseph Carroll, Rabbi Shlomo Alkavitz, Mahadri Beirav, the Mahabit, the Maharit, we're talking about giants. Because they were the generation that came after the expulsion of Jews from Spain. The expulsion of Jews from Spain shattered completely the Jewish world. For hundreds of years, Spain had been the citadel of Torah and Jewish knowledge. All of the giants came from Spain. And then, nearly overnight, a grand, magnificent, incredible Jewish community was destroyed and wiped out. And Ferdinand and Isabella signed the document calling for the expulsion of all Jews from Spain. What, of course, Ferdinand and Isabella didn't understand is that they sounded the death knell for Spain. We've even forgotten, if we remember our history, the Spanish Armada. Spain was a superpower. There was a struggle for ascendancy on the seas between Britain and Spain. What are you talking? You remember your American history? Who discovered America? Starting from Christopher Columbus and, I don't know, Vasco da Gama. And come on, give me back those names of the old days. Magellan, huh? Ponce de Leon. Who are all the great guys that were walking around with their swords taking over all of America? Who? This great Spanish Armada. What are you? Who was it? Was it Nelson?
Drake
destroyed the Spanish Armada? Good man. Good. What did Spain become after the expulsion of the Jews from Spain? Spain became nothing. The only thing that may have resurrected it was... the rain in Spain is mainly on the plain, you understand? 500 years later, somebody makes a silly song about Spain. And Spain, all of a sudden... and of course, Jewish tourists, but all right, maybe there is... I'm not going to comment on that, because could be there is something to seeing the centers of great Jewish life.
In 500 years, we can even go to Spain.
Yeah, well... because they said that there was a cherem on Spain. There was a cherem, a ban of excommunication on anybody who would go to Spain, and Jews simply did not set foot in Spain until recently. Jews, in fact, did not... By the way, that was an extremely healthy Jewish response. In the 50s already, 10 years after the Shoah, Israel was receiving reparations already from Germany. 10 years! I think it was much healthier. 500 years Jews didn't set foot in Spain. And Spain turned into to nothing. But what Spain did was shake up Jewish life to the very core. It was a Holocaust, a spiritual and a cultural Holocaust of awesome and frightening proportions. And therefore, the Chachmei Tzfat, when they saw what was happening before them, they felt that they could hear the footsteps of the Mashiach. Because following every period of great suffering comes the period where HaKadosh Baruch Hu embraces his people and pours out his great love to them. Of course, we are the witnesses to the fourth period in Jewish history. Following the Shoah, it's no small coincidence that 3 years following the Holocaust comes the establishment of the State of Israel. By the way, of all the periods that we've talked about, this was the swiftest and greatest response of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know why?
Rabbi Pam mentioned it.
You know what? Rabbi Pam mentioned it.
Yeah, but he didn't send his voice.
And he mentioned it. Says the establishment of the State of Israel was clearly an act of God's great kindness. Yeah, he said it. But I think I once said what shook me up. I was sitting there and I'm listening to him, and it just happened to be a matter of coincidence in a sense. I was in Toronto and he has a son. That Shabbos I was in Toronto, about a block or two from there, and he has a son who's Rav of the Lakewood Minyan in Toronto. And Rav Pam had been my Rebbe. He was the Rebbe of my oldest brother, Olav HaShalom, and my other brother who lives in Petach Tikva, it's Lang Yavin. They knew the three gold boys. He knew us very well. He even liked us. So I heard that Rav Pam was going to speak. I ran. He was billed to speak about Chinuch Atzmoi in Eretz Yisrael. So here, this is the the main thing. I listened to this. It was the most refreshing view of Jewish history, and you'll see right away how it's based on a Malbim. He didn't say the Malbim, but he just said Malbim Yishayah. What was fascinating, he spoke for 28 minutes in this overview of Jewish history, and when it was over, he said, and you know, Chinuch Atzmoi is doing a terrific job in Eretz Yisrael, and you should support it. Now, I thought that this was, you know, one of the great presentations of Zekan Roshei HaYeshiva in America, the elder statesman of Torah in America. So I meet some people the next day, you know, who had been there, and I said, did you hear what Rav Pam said yesterday? Yes, a bright fellow tells me, yeah, Chinuch Atzmoi is good. It went over him. He didn't internalize the great message. He had been, for all of his years in yeshiva, he had most probably been taught that the Medinas Yisrael is garnished and it's terrible. He didn't even hear it. It's coming from the Gadol HaDor. No. He couldn't hear it. It was amazing. I stood there with my mother. I mean, you didn't hear what he said? Yeah. He said that it's kedai, very kedai to support Chinuch Atzmoi. I'll never forget that. But he did make one other statement. And this is a statement that I have begun to respect, maybe even revere. I think he did quote it in the name of the Bris Kehov. The Bris Kehov was Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik's uncle, who was the Gadol b'Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael at the time of the establishment of the state. So he said the following: the establishment of the State of Israel, by the way, Brisk has always been anti-Zionist. You can't get more anti-Zionist than Brisk. I mean, it's equal to the Turek Carta, pretty much. So here was a statement that I remember from many years ago, and I didn't pay much attention to it. He said the following: the establishment of the state of Israel is given a shmeichel from the Rebbeinu Shalom. The establishment of the state of Israel was a smile from God. The secular Jews shouldn't ruin it. And they're doing precisely that.
Because the religious didn't come.
No, you know, like I'm a broken record, you're a broken record. Okay. I know exactly, you don't have to say anything you're going to say, because I can say it for you. You're right, everybody's right, you're right, I'm right. But the fact is that the Briskerov just, I mean, I have greater respect for the statements made by Gedolei Yisrael. And this is what he quoted. This was seven or eight years ago. This was before Oslo, before everything. Zondonish Kayamachem. Of course, I always say, now I want you to, you listen to this. You listen to me now. I'm not even going to say on the tape who it is. Let them guess. Zeklau Gobel. I have always believed that whatever goes wrong over here, the blame does not lie with any one sector. There is unfortunately enough blame to go around for everybody. Yes, religious Jews who didn't come on Aliyah are to blame. A religious Jewish community that Aliyah is not on the agenda today at all in the United States, solely to blame. I'm just under the influence of David Bar-Ilan's article this morning. The conference of presidents of major Jewish organizations, you understand, invite leftists and invite the new historians to come, and will not hear a word from 200,000 Jews in Yehuda V'Shomron who are most going to be affected by it all. Okay? There's my friend Malcolm online. Okay? We were once friends. It ended this morning. All right. I'll be nice then. These are the four periods in Jewish history. Where does this begin? It begins in this piece in Yeshayahu. This piece of the Malbim. And this piece in the Malbim is therefore going to explain the entire structure of Sefer Yeshayahu. Because as we said last week, from 49 until the end, we're talking about the vision that will come at the end of days, great things that are going to involve an entire world. You may even see in the psukim in this parak that it was necessary for the world to become much larger. That God's message had to go out. But all she needs is the front. That's what I'm doing.
Not this one.
That one. Oh. My eyes spotted. Okay. The fact is, looking back, there would have been a problem. If the Mashiach would have come at the time of Chizkiyahu, you wouldn't be able to say, "V'hoi Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz," God is going to be king over the whole earth. Man does not yet inhabit the whole earth. Half the earth doesn't even know he exists. There is no man on half of the earth. There's no man, most probably, on two-thirds of the earth. We're talking about how many? What? 2,000 years before Columbus?
People were there.
People. First of all, what are you talking about? Do you know the difference in the world population between this century and the last century? And the fact that men, there were many countries on the face of the earth. Half the earth was uninhabited. Unless you call the Cheyenne and the Mohawks. I don't know, you call the people. Okay, good, good, good. But there's no question about it. Half the world simply didn't exist at the time of Yeshayahu. Man started off in the Middle East. For that matter, do you know precisely where man started from? Where did he start from? Huh? Iraq. What are you talking about? A mile from here. Adam HaRishon was created from the earth on Har HaBayit. That's where the Babashim made him from. Because at that time, the Babashim was still allowed up on Har HaBayit. So he made man over there. The Gemara says, and the Rama brings it, Adam mimekom kaparato nivra, man was created from the place where his atonement comes. Mimakom hamizbeach, from the place where the altar was on the Har HaBayit, that's where the Rebbeinu took the earth with which he made Adam HaRishon. There's a second opinion in the Gemara that says that he gathered earth from all four corners of the world and made Adam from them. From the earth, four corners of the world, but where he made him is still there. Because ultimately, what that opinion means, that man is going to cover all four corners of the earth, and then Misham Mitzion Teitzei Torah U'Devar Hashem Mimishalayim, and all the peoples of the world are going to flow toward the Har HaBayit, and from there the message is going to go out. The Malbim, we're going to read through the Malbim. Last Tov Reish Chok Your message now, the Pasuk says, your message now is going to be a message of, you will be a light unto the nations, and the message is going to go out at Kitzei Haaretz, until the very ends of the earth. I am adding, therefore, at Kitzei Haaretz means until the very ends of the earth. You men will have to be at the very ends of the earth. Of the intent over here, Tidek Moshe Kasavnu Lemala, Kapitel Yudbet. In Kapitel Yudbet, chapter 12, he only dealt with it briefly. The last line in the Malbim. Hamechuvin Bitvorov Elu Tidek Moshe Kasavnu Lemala, Kapitel Yudbet, Ki Mei Oz. Now on page Tov Reish Chof Aleph. Ki may oz nitpazu aseret hashvatim ayedei sancheret, from the time that the 12 to 10 tribes were dispersed through sancheret, may eit hahi hitchila eit hageula. From that time began the period of redemption. Geula. Do you hear? This is the statement that the Malbim is making. Vuhu shemeyet hahi hitchila nevim lenabot. It was from that time on and further that the prophets began to say, Shahnidachim ha'ele, these dispersed, yidkatsu, they will be gathered, v'yashufu l'bitzaron aside ha'tikva. It's the takeoff on a pasuk in Tanakh. To their fortress will come those who are bound up by the great hope, ha'tikva, that they will come back. V'hagolot ha'chel hazeh. The beginning of this golus was Bishnat Shesh L'Chizkiyo, in the sixth year of Chizkiyo. That's when the 10 tribes were taken off into exile. It's going to take another few years until Sancheret is finally standing at the gates of Yerushalayim. From that time, the prophecy of the prophets about the redemption began, which means the following. I would imagine, listen, Torah itself spoke about the ingathering of the exiles. But there can't be any ingathering of exiles if there are no exiles. When was the first moment in history when there was a Jewish exile? When the 10 tribes were taken off into Golos by Sancheret. From that moment already. In other words, the father who sends his children off into exile is admonishing. What comes immediately after a frightening chastisement of this sort that he wants to embrace and bring them back? So it is from that moment on and further that the Nevi'im began to talk about the ingathering of the exiles. V'im hayu Yisrael shovim oz b'tshuva, if Israel would have done tshuva then, tshuva shleima, hayta ha-geula ha-hi magi'a, The Magad, take it, Bishnat Tetvav L'Chizkiyo, the Gehula would have come in the 15th year of Chizkiyo. The 15th year of Chizkiyo is when Sancherev and his forces are surrounding Yerushalayim. She'oz Nopal Ashur, and that night is the night at which he's destroyed and Ashur falls for Ha'yo'oz Ha'eit She'yoshivu Hanidachim Ha'ele. Ashur, who had taken them off into exile, this was now the time for them to be returned. Thou came hismich nivuato al hagula v'hakibutz el matalat sancherev kemoshe tir elam ala. I said this earlier, therefore, chapter 10 in Yeshayahu that talks about the fall of Assyria is followed by chapter 11. And chapter 11 speaks about the shoot that is going to come out of Yishai and is going to bring redemption to a whole world. Yeshayahu talks about Geula immediately after he talks about the fall of the Assyrian Empire, because the fall of the Assyrian Empire signals the end of terrible, terrible Jewish suffering, and then the period already has the potential of being messianic. Yes? No. The order of Yeshayahu was done by Anshei Knesset HaGedola. Chopping it up into chapters was done by the Catholic Church, but they didn't move anything around. In other words, the order of the Pesukim, as they exist from the beginning to the end, all Anshei Knesset HaGedola. More than that, Chizkiyahu v'Seyato, the Gemara says, it was Chizkiyahu and the wise men around him who put together the Yeshayahu. Was put after Perek Yod. Or by Chizkiyahu or by Yeshayahu. There's no such thing as... But all that the Prakim did was take a whole and divide it up. So it doesn't affect the... the only way I can describe to you what part of Yeshayahu we're talking about, unfortunately, is by using the chapter divisions. That's all I'm doing. Absolutely. He's going to bring even more than that now. Something that we already discussed earlier, that the Gemara says in a number of places that God wanted to make Chizkiyahu Mashiach. There is the proof in Chazal. The first one that they talk about who's going to be Mashiach is Chizkiyahu. Why didn't they say David? God wanted to make David Mashiach. God wanted to make Shlomo Mashiach. Why the first talk in history of somebody being Mashiach is Chizkiyahu? Because Chizkiyahu is following the awesome and frightening tragedy that had befallen the Jewish people through the Assyrian Empire. Ki kol hanevuos, all of the prophecies, sheniba b'chele kamishon, niba kodem mapelat mapalat samchere. Everything that Yeshayahu says at the first part of the Sefer was all said before the fall of Sancherev. V'oz, sofo beruach Hashem, then he looked with the Spirit of God, ki yesh tikva, there is hope, sheyitastu hanidachim tekef liatzam, yes, there is hope that the dispersed will be gathered into their land immediately, liatzam v'yigael will be redeemed, v'zeh toli b'tnai. But for that to happen, it is dependent on the condition in Yashuvu v'tshuva, if they will do tshuva. Ulushlichu tzeh hoyo Yeshayahu miyuchad kol hazman ha'u ba'od Chizkiyahu chan. As long as Chizkiyahu is alive, Yeshayahu's task, his charge from God, was to bring Klal Yisrael back to do tshuva. Shekol hazman ha'u hayo tikva, during the time of Chizkiyahu there was hope, Sheyeh Chizkiyahu Mashiach Elokei Yaakov, he would be the anointed one of the God of Yaakov. Kemo shezokru chachameinu v'mekomot chavim, as our wise men mentioned in many places, avol devarav lo asu peri, the words of Yeshayahu did not bear fruit. Ki hador ahu bein Yehuda shenishru, because that generation, both Yehuda who remained, bein hashvatim shegalu, and also the tribes that had been exiled, because he is speaking, his words are addressed not only to the people of Yehuda and Binyamin, amongst whom he lives and who find themselves in Eretz Yisrael now, it's directed outward to everybody. The first pasuk in the Perek, and we learned it last week, Vayosem pi kechedev chado, he made my mouth like a sharp sword. Who do you use a sword against? People who are close. To Yehuda and Binyamin, his words are sharp as a sword. But he's also described as a bow. His words are described like the arrow. The arrow goes off into the distance because his words are being said not only to you. Arrow, el harachokim, to the ones who are distant. But since the fact is that lo shavu b'tshuva, when we talk kach, lo shavu gam kein la'atzim, because they didn't do tshuva, they didn't return to Eretz Yisrael. V'habayit necharav achar kach ba'avon ha'nishalim. Because of the sin of those who remained, the Bet HaMikdash was destroyed. For Avad Kol Chazon, all vision, all great prophetic vision was lost. Kamo Shiroa, Yeshayahu Ba'atzma Zoz Gam Vimei Chizkiyo. Yeshayahu himself saw it in the days of Chizkiyo. At the end of chapter 39, we learned it. Didn't he tell him that you and everything that is in your house is going to be taken off to Bavel? Yeshayahu already saw this 150 years before it was going to happen. So Yeshayahu thought that all of his toil was for nothing, and all of his energy went out for that which was absolutely zero. But God told him, you should know that you have not toiled in vain. All of these prophecies, everything that has been said, shenibeta, all the prophecies that you prophesy, al shuv hanidachim, that the dispersed are going to be returned, you should know, yitkaimu ba'acharit hayamim. All the words that you had said in the days of Chizkiyo, and you thought that they would be fulfilled immediately, not a single word that you have said is going to be in vain. It will all be fulfilled at the end of days. When the salvation comes at the end of days, it's not going to be an individual one only for the Jewish people, but it is going to embrace an entire world. Would it have come in the days of Chizkiyo, it would have been a salvation that would have addressed itself to the Jewish people, the Jewish people alone. What you're talking about, what you're going to be saying, is going to become salvation for a whole world. In place of that he was told to go bring up, stand up the tribes of Israel that had been sent off, and the names of the places that Sancherev took them off to Lachlach and Chavor, we have no idea where they are. In place of this, my salvation is going to go to the ends of the earth. And instead of that which I wanted, which was to bring that generation back in Shuvah, to bring back the shoots of Israel, and that you did not succeed, this pasuk is really, the pasuk that we're dealing with is the pasuk that is the swing pasuk in all of Yeshayahu. He has been given a new tafkid, a new task is being placed upon him. Not merely to be a Navi to Klal Yisrael, but to be an Or LaGoyim, a light unto the nations. The Dovazelo Tiela Orgoyim, you're going to be a light unto the nations, the Toir Batzlocha Namshis, the Chol Olam, you're going to bring spiritual success to a whole world. Would the redemption have been in the days of Chizkiyo? It would not have been that all-embracing. And I imagine because there wasn't an all-embracing world. There wasn't a world. There wasn't a world. Sorry. The Lohoiso Ha'amun Ha'amitis Mispashetas Kol Kach Kimoshe Yeh. I want you to listen to these words, because the true faith would not have spread out, be as spread out as it will be at the end of days. In the days of Chizkiyahu, aside from the Jewish people, the rest of the world were pagans, were heathens, were idolaters. The Rambam at the end of the Yad HaChazaka has a good word to say about Islam and Christianity. And he says there was a great purpose that was served by those two great movements. The purpose that was served is number one. They brought the downfall of paganism and heathenism and brought the idea of the belief in a one invisible God to a whole world. And second, they created, they think anyway, they only copied us, but what they did was they created the anticipation of the millennium. In other words, a world is prepared because it's a different world than the world of Chizkiyahu. It's a world that does believe in one God. It is a world that does believe that there's going to be a greater day. They may be surprised to find out who that God is going to be, who will be king of the earth. So the Rambam says there was a tremendous service that was accomplished by these great religions. Because the mindset of a whole world is different. I don't know if I would want to be a latter-day prophet. I would say maybe God was waiting for the internet so that the message of the coming of the Messiah will be will make it to all parts of the world. The only problem is there aren't that many computers in Syria. That's what has to happen. And there are only 80 cell phones in all of Syria. You understand? Now you know why Israelis have difficulty communicating with them? How can you communicate with 80 cell phones? Vaita, let's finish this piece because it sets the stage. It sets the stage for all of the beautiful things that are going to be said in Yeshayahu from here to the end. Velo, so you hear what he said? Velo, haitaha emunaha amitit mitpashetet kol kach, the true faith would not have spread that much, kamo sheyiyah ba'achas hayomim, as it will be at the end of days, kamo shekasev, as it says about the end of days, ki oz ehafoch el amin sofa beruda, I'm going to turn over to the people a clear tongue, they're going to understand a clear message. Umavuah, and therefore it is clear, ki acharei mot chizkiyahu, after the death of Chizkiyahu, when Yeshayahu saw that all of his efforts had been in vain, meaning he thought that all of his efforts were in vain. Or, as we had mentioned earlier, maybe the change in the entire prophetic frame of Yeshayahu changed after he said the prophecy that appeared at the end of chapter 39, where he tells Chizkiyahu that everything that is here, all of your wealth, will be taken off into Babel. And he tells them, he sees already that there's going to be a Churban HaBayit. And fascinating that right after that prophecy of Churban HaBayit begins Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami. And now Yeshayahu is being told that your message is not going to be regionally, locally, it's going to be globally. I love those. I love Hebrew. This is exactly one. It's going to be a global message, not a regional one. May Oz Hityaish Hanavi. At the end of chapter 39, Yeshayahu had fallen into despair. And he saw that the dispersed tribes are not going to return now. And from that moment on and further, what cloaks him is now the vision of the great redemption that is going to come at the end of the days. Sheniba, that he prophesied min kapitel mem ad sof ha-sefer, from chapter 40 until the end of the sefer. and more specifically now from chapter 49, he begins his prophecy to the future. Asher dvarav eile hem ke'inyan hotza'a lehem she'achar sheni bagulat koresh yisaper ek sholacho Hashem levaser nechamot gedolot atidot. I pointed out to you that in beginning at the end of chapter 44 until 49, he talks about Koresh, king of Persia, who is going to bring down the Babylonian Empire. And what does he say at the end of chapter 49? Birchu tzu'umi Babel, get out of Babel, birchu mi kazdim, flee from before thee, kazdim. So this is his message to Klal Yisrael. Now begins his message for a whole world. We have another few minutes. We're going to do a few psukim. Where were we up to? Pasuk 7. Kohar Hashem. So says the God, Goel Yisrael Kedosho. Now, by the way, as I pointed out, remember, the personal talk that Yeshayahu has to say about himself is going to continue at certain psukim in chapter 50 as well. So now he says, Kohar Hashem, so says God, Goel Yisrael, the Redeemer of Israel, Kedosho, the Holy One of Israel. Livizo Nefesh. There are times at which, when I read this, this is a threefold description. People who are bezon nefesh, their souls are shamed and embarrassed. This is the way the goy looks at the Jewish people. I have a feeling that, you know, despite what the Mefarshim say, we're living post-Holocaust. This is what we were looked upon as, you know, vermin, bezon nefesh, limitoev goy, a nation that is an abomination. And that's not a bad word. There are good nations and there are Obama nations. That's what they were looked at. Le'eved moshlim, slaves to those who rule. Melachim yiru v'kamu, after the period of such a low in Jewish history. Do you know what's going to happen following the low? Yiru, melachim yiru v'kamu. Kings will see and stand up. Sodom v'yishtachavu. Officers, ministers are going to bow down. L'man Hashem asher neman. For God, because of God who is trustworthy. Kedosh Yisrael, the Holy One of Israel, by Yivkoreva. He chose you. And because He chose you, you are going to rise from the depths. Kor Hashem. So says God, Be'et Ratzon Anipicha, at a time of goodwill, or when it was your will and you called to me, Anipicha, I answered you, Ubiyom Yeshua, at the day of salvation, Azadicha, I helped you, Ve'etzorcha, I protected you, Ve'etzorcha can mean either that's the way Rashi says it. It could also mean I formed you, but Rashi says, Ve'eshmerecha, I guarded you, I took care of you, Ve'etemcha lebrit am, I'm going to make you a nation with whom I have a treaty, lahakim eretz, lahanchil nechalot shomimot, lahakim eretz, to pick up the land. And I just love the Rashi here. It's my kind of Rashi. Every Rashi is my kind of Rashi. Lahakim eretz, eretz Yisrael habechud ali, eretz Yisrael that is chosen by me, bechol ha'aratzos from all other lands. Lahakim eretz, through you I'm going to bring up that land. Lahanchil nechalot shomimot. You're going to inherit a nachala that was desolate, but you're going to turn it into a garden of Eden. Lema. And how am I going to do this? How am I going to build up the land? Because lemor, I'm going to say la asurim, to the ones who are incarcerated, say you out. La asher b'choshech, to those who are in darkness, I'm going to say to them, higolu, be revealed. The Malm is beautiful over here. There's an earlier pasuk in Yeshua. We don't have to learn it inside because you know the pasuk. Uvo ha'ovdim, v'hoya b'yom ahu, yitaka b'shofar gadol, on that day the great shofar is going to be sounded. Uvo'u ha'ovdim b'eretz ashur, those who are lost in the land of Ashur, and those who are cast out of Eretz Mitzrayim, v'yishtachavu l'Hashem, b'har ha'kodesh, they will bow down before God, b'har ha'kodesh, b'Yerushalayim. Huh? Karlbach made it famous. I mean, I told you already 10 times my story with Karlbach and that song. I should say it. No, that's not the thing. Okay, you just remind me and I'll tell you that story. I always say about that song had a great share in bringing us on Aliyah. I was singing it, you know, while packing the Fashlugana crates and while worrying about everything, you know, I kept singing that. And I told him what great impact that song had on me. Uvo uho, I'm a singing rabbi. Uvo uho ofim yedes ashur v'yamidot in v'yedes mitzrayim v'yishtachavu l'Hashem v'harakodesh. What's going on over there? Yerushalayim. So the Rav, Rav Soloveitchik, I wasn't in good shape this morning. The Rav said that there was a difference between the exile of Ashur and the exile of Mitzrayim. The exile of Ashur, Jews were not enslaved. If anything, they became wealthy and important people in the palaces of kings out there. But they were lost from Yiddishkeit. They assimilated. So Uvo Ha'ovdim, those who were lost to Yiddishkeit, Be'eretz Ashur. What was Mitzrayim? Mitzrayim was a concentration camp experience. It was Jews who knew what their identity was, and if they forgot it, there was a going to remind them. Who's going to need the Yeshua more quicker than the other? Those who are lost out there, Be'eretz Ashur, will still maintain ourselves. So Ashur represents one kind of exile, and Mitzrayim represents another. I mean, the Rav really describes America as an Ashur experience. And the Shoah, of course, was a Mitzrayim experience. So he says the following. The Malbim didn't know what the Rav said, but on the basis of that, I understand the Malbim. He says, how am I going to build up the land and give you the desolate places? Because I'm going to tell Asudim, those who are imprisoned, Tseyu, out. That's the Mitzrayim experience. La'asher b'choshech, those who've been lost in the darkness, they simply have lost their identity. You know what I'm going to tell them? He golu, become revealed again in all the greatness of your identity. So le'ma la'asudim tseyu, la'asher b'choshech he golu, al drachim yiru, on the roads they will graze, u'b'chol shvoyim mad'itam, and on every high place I'm going to give them that which they need to nourish them, because they're going to have a journey home. Pasuk 10, lo yir'ovu, they will not be hungry, v'lo yitzmo, and they won't be thirsty, v'lo yakeng sharav v'shemesh, heat wave and sun will not smite them, because you know who's going to bring them back? Mirachamam, the one who loves them, yinahagam, is going to lead them. V'albu mabu'e mayim yinahalein, you know where he's going to lead them? He's going to lead them by the streams of water. The word rachamim, you have to understand that in Tanakh, the word rachamim does not only mean mercy, it also means love. It also means love. In Aramaic it's so. A man's friend is called rachamohi, his friend. The santi kol harai ladorach, all of my mountains, I'm going to turn them into a road. And my little pathways will be raised and lifted, so you will be able to make the great journey homeward. Hine elem, the description is great. Hine elem meirachot yavo, these are going to come from afar. Hine elem mitzafon umiyam, these from the north and the west. The elem meeret sinim, and those are going to come. Sinim over here does not mean China. Sinim, the Targum says, means south. That's another meaning of the word sin. Samach Yudam. Very nice. Very, very nice, like I said. She said, Edet Sinim, maybe it comes from the word Sinai, which is to the south. Very good. And I have a feeling that in Pasuk Yud Beis, the first ones, it just says, Meirachok Yavo. You know who is Meirachok? Meirachok, that's always Well, very often it refers to the 10 tribes because they're so far out. Ranu Shamayim, let the heavens sing, the Gili Aretz, and the earth will be full of joy. Yi'u ufitzchu harim rina, the mountains are going to burst out into song. Ki nicham Hashem amo, because God has consoled his people. Ki nicham Hashem amo va'aniyav yerachem. Aniyav, he will have mercy, pity, or he will love. Aniyav, either his poor or those who have suffered. And then begins the next pasuk. We'll just learn this pasuk and then continue from here. Vatom et Sion, after all of these great promises, Vatom et Sion, Sion said, Azovani Hashem, God has forsaken me, Vahashem Shecheichoni, and God has forgotten me. This is the beginning of one of the seven haftarot of consolation. I'd have to look, I don't remember anywhere, whether it's a Shoftim or a the seven prophecies of Kahar? Akev. So I was wrong on both counts. Was it your bar mitzvah, Sedra? Gechaptim by the bar mitzvah. The seven haftarot of consolation will be in these 15 chapters of the 16 chapters of Yeshayahu from here to the end. We will have the seven chapters of consolation, and we're also going to have the haftorah for Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. We're going to have the haftorah for Yom Kippur. Between now and the end, it's jam-packed with haftorahs. If I can get through these chapters, Sora, I'm not making a promise that you can hold me to. If we get through these chapters, we will have gone through more than half of the Haftorahs of Yeshayahu, which would be a great accomplishment. Okay, everyone.